2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome to the Prospect Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I'm filling in for JJ Cooper this week as he is on a well-deserved vacation. Alongside me to be my co-partner, my co-host this week, Jesus Cano, one of our members of the prospect team. Jesus, man, how's it going? How was your first top 30 update?
It was a lot of work, man, that went into it. Like, obviously, I've been a huge prospect fan even before I joined BA. So you always see the finished product, but you never see the phone calls, the cross-checking, and everything that goes into making this happen, man. So it was a good experience, and I'm already looking forward to the next one, even though it's going to be a lot more work, man. But these are really fun to do, and, yeah, it was kind of great to see the process with everything going on. And, of course, cool to be here on the podcast. If you're filling in for JJ, I guess I'm filling in for Jeff. So we'll see how everything goes today.
Yeah, more than adequately replacing Jeff, but you can tell by me not being able to say the word adequately that I'm not doing an adequate job of replacing JJ. And this is probably a little bit too inside baseball, but we're only a minute in, so we'll give a couple minutes. But you know, it's funny you bring up the reporting and all the additional stuff that you have to do with the top 30 lists, because I kind of feel like that's the work. The writing part of it really, like, it's work and it takes some time, but I feel like I have to sort of build up information wise and research wise, have enough conversations, look at, you know, whatever data, whatever we can get access to. And then even kind of digging on synergy. And then I'm kind of like, okay, I feel good about where my rankings are at and the sort of players I'm adding on or the new reports I have to write. I think this is one of the most strenuous top 30 updates for us, because we're trying to balance a few things. We're trying to balance the first few months of the season, the injuries that have happened. But in addition to that, it's all the players that have broken out, guys that are showing either better or worse skills, guys that have evolved and de-evolved as well. That obviously happens. These are all human beings. And trying to catch up with all that. And then, you know, we throw in the domestic complex league starting in May. And that's a whole new wrinkle. And we still don't have a great when we start doing this reporting process, we have like a 10-day sample size to even go off of in some of those complex leagues. And then right as we're releasing the lists, the Dominican Summer League starts.
Yeah.
And there's all types of reaction for that. So I feel we've kind of put together the list, and now it gets a little bit easier, I'll say, Jesus, because now we're now going in and saying, all right, who are the complex guys that need to move up or move out or you know, whatever. And then we get the draftees after the draft. Once they sign, they get dumped in and we get new scouting reports that have all been written by our amateur team. So
yeah. Shout out to them.
I think it gets a little easier because, like, I'm looking at my Red Sox. There were five or six guys I had to write new reports on. We got graduations, especially early in the season now.
Yeah.
With the PEI, some of these better prospects are graduating a lot earlier. So, This is one of the best updates, and I think it takes a good snapshot of, like, non-complex leagues first couple of months. Where are guys moving? Where are they trending? And who are the guys that we should be talking about? So if you haven't gone and checked that out, the top 30s, they're up at the top of the Baseball America website. In addition to the top 30 list, we have sort of like a per system for all 30 organizations breakdown, looking at the risers, the fallers, the new additions, the injuries. And there's a lot of unreported injury news in there, I'll say, as well. So go and check that out, because there's other stuff that had not been reported, kind of just undisclosed 7-day IL stuff. We've cleared up some of that. So a lot of information. Go and check that out. We have new mock drafts of all the college stuff leading up to the College World Series this weekend. Really exciting time to sub. So that's my shameless.
It's great time to be a Baseball America subscriber right now, man. Exactly.
It's my shameless plug at the top of the show, Jesus. But now let's talk about some baseball. Jesus is out there in Arizona. We're going to talk a little bit about complex league guys. But before we do that, we're in call-up season. We had Roman Anthony, number one prospect in baseball, cover boy for our 2025 prospect handbook, make his major league debut. Had an error in the outfield, of course. You know, the yips were right there on an easy sort of ground ball to right field that, you know, cost them some runs, unfortunately. looked fine at the plate. You know, we'll see how long it takes to hit for him to settle in, but an exciting player. And I think, you know, for Red Sox fans, kind of a welcomed sign that there might be something watchable about this team, because it's been tough sledding since Alex Bregman went down.
No, for sure, man. It's crazy that the news happened while we were recording the Hot Sheet show yesterday, so it all came together quickly. And it's also like you look at that stacked Red Sox system. Obviously, you have it. You know it like the back of your hand. And the amount of talent that they have there that was able to get them back up, you know, like it's crazy to see. Just I think after he hit that close to 500-foot homer, it's like, okay, at what point do we keep on playing the waiting game? And obviously that was answered pretty quickly. But, I mean, just from your perspective, for a team that follows it up so much, man, like what has there ever been a time for any franchise to see a core group of prospects, this trio, to call up like that and now all be together at the same time at the beginning of their careers?
Yeah, I think, you know, it probably is somewhat relatable to what we've seen in recent years from the Orioles. In some regards, probably what we saw from those Astros cores and the Cubs cores, obviously the Orioles being the odd man out there, they haven't won a championship. It's probably pretty similar to that. And I even look back to, you know, the Red Sox sort of last core that they put together, you know, and that was like Xander and Mookie and Jackie Bradley Jr. all sort of coming up at the same time. And, you know, I think that potentially it could be like that. The adjustment to the major leagues has been a little bit harder for hitters lately. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens with Anthony, Meyer and Campbell. They were all hitting sort of back to back to back last night in the lineup. I don't think that the offense is necessarily the fatal flaw with this Red Sox team. So I don't think he's going to cure all ills. I think he's going to give them another power bat to protect some guys in the middle of the lineup. They've kind of sorely been missing that, particularly since Cassis got hurt. Bregman went down. That's kind of like your 3-4 hitters or guys that are going to hit in the top of that order. You know, so I think he certainly helps in that regard. It was already a good defensive outfield, so he might actually make them a little bit worse defensively without Willy or Abreu out there. The big issue has been infield defense, particularly since Bregman went down. And, you know, I don't think he's the reinforcements there. So I don't think it's going to cure all their ills. It's going to make them much more watchable. And I think top to bottom with the emergence of Navarez, I kind of think it's one of the more watchable lineups in baseball right now. So I think that's kind of the positive with this. We'll see how long it lasts. Because it is still kind of an odd man out situation. You know, we've heard some rumblings that Jaron Duran could certainly get moved. Padres obviously being the prime suspect at this point in time, but all that stuff is always fluid and can certainly change on a dime. But once Abreu is back, I guess the question kind of becomes like, do you move Rafael to more of a utility role? If you do want to keep Anthony up, does Anthony go back down to AAA? Because he can't play second base. So he's not going to replace Christian Campbell. He can't play third base. He's not going to replace Meyer. So I think those are kind of the roster questions that they still face. But it could all be stuff that shakes itself out with a trade or, you know, another potential injury. So, it's going to be something that's worth watching at this point. But it may not be sort of his final destination this season. There's still a chance that he could end up back in Worcester for a couple of weeks, but you know, all that stuff is always answered pretty easily if he goes out there and he mashes, right? So,
and let me ask you this. I mean, you've been around prospect coverage for so much. You've seen, you know, the best guys have an excellent start. You've seen the best guys have a slow start and have to come down. What's kind of that issue? Not that issue, but I guess that adjustment period that top guys like Roman Anthony that have all these high expectations that have been crushing it in the minors, you know, what are some adjustments or issues that they run into when they get called up? Cause I think that's a big part of it that a lot of people, you know, tend to oversee.
Yeah. I think you got to write off like the first 40 or so at bats or plate appearances. Like I remember going back, like Alex Bregman was awful over his, he was like 1 or 2 for like 50, like 40 over his first, like however many games. So I think you're going to run into stuff like that where it's such a short sample size. Guys are just, I think, making adjustments to the routine and also making adjustments to just probably seeing quality pitching time and time again. There's not a lot of softies that you're running into in the major leagues. Even if they throw 90 miles an hour, there's a reason that they're there. There's some deception in a weird angle, movement, you know, premium location, the ability to command the baseball or multiple pitches and multiple pitch shapes and attack in the zone. There's just so many things that you run into that I think is hard to replicate. I think in terms of seeing velocity and seeing stuff, these guys have all seen it. And I know particularly Anthony and any of these Red Sox guys, they're on the traject machines consistently. That's where they take most of their BP. So they've already faced a lot of this stuff. I believe that every single guy in the Red Sox system, the first guy that they face in the traject is Garrett Cole. So, because that was Anthony, Meyer, and Campbell's first player that they faced on the traject machine. And I think it was the same for Nas Anatello when I talked to him. So they're constantly challenging these guys. So, you know, I think it's just an adjustment period. I think it's just whatever it is. It's maybe getting used to the routine. It might be getting used to, you know, facing the quality of pitchers that you're facing. It could be that you run into a buzzsaw in a really good rotation who's just like in prime shape at that point in time in the first week of the, you know, first few games of the season. I think the timing of it is obviously a big part of it, but it's tough because I think it's so individualized from player to player. Like, there's probably no magic pill here in terms of an answer as to why guys struggle, because it could be a variety of different reasons.
Yeah. And obviously with seeing, you know, Roman Anthony getting called up, hits his time. There's still a couple of guys on our prospect list, you know, top prospect guys that could be on the way. Obviously, we're not going to see Leo DeVries, Jesus Madé, or Sebastian Walker get called up, but there are a couple of pitchers on that list that could be able to make that transition soon, right?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Like, we were talking about this before the show, and, you know, obviously we've already seen Roky Sasaki. How long he's on the shelf for, we will see. But Bubba Chandler is a guy who's right on the cusp of the major leagues, and the stuff has been excellent. He's been good in AAA. I think it's not a matter of if he's called up this season, it's a matter of when. And we're kind of getting into those days now. Pittsburgh may want to try to hold on to this PPI eligibility with Chandler, but, you know, I don't know if that is necessarily good form. I think ultimately when guys are ready, they're ready, and it can stunt their growth or, you know, potentially lead to injuries, other things, depending upon the guy's mentality. If you try to play some of those service time games, they're already past Super 2 more than likely. This would be on, you know, June 10th, this would be the latest Super 2 day in, you know, over 10 years or something. But certainly since the PPI came into existence, which kind of pushed up those dates a little bit. So, you know, they're past that. They kind of have that extra year of control, which might be their only concern, and not as concerned about that extra pick. I think Chandler could be up at any point in time. If there's an injury in that rotation, it's certainly a possibility. I think it's probably been discussed. The issue there is I think eventually they're going to start to stretch out Ashcraft as more of a starter when he's up in the major leagues. He's in the 40-man roster. Thomas Harrington was already added to the 40-man roster. So you have two guys there that are options. It just depends how they play this game. I'm just trying to give you all the mechanics and all the balls that are in the air with a guy like Chandler. But I do think he eventually gets up. Chase Burns now in AAA, Jesus. I don't know if you saw him out in Arizona this spring. I assume you did. He's been electric. He's jumped a few levels already. Overmatching AA and Southern League competition. Now he's up in AAA with Louisville. That should be an interesting one. I don't know if you've maybe heard any whispers out in Arizona, but any predictions on when we do see Burns? I think it's probably maybe a little bit later, but we'll see.
We'll see, because I think the big thing, you know, as I was, you know, starting up and reading up on Chase Burns a little bit more at the beginning of the year, is that they wanted him to kind of follow the trajectory that Rhett Loader had last year. You know, he ended up debuting, you know, right at the end of the season. But, like, I think when you look at the stuff he's had, and I've been able to watch Chase Burns, you know, I've been able to talk to him during spring training and all that stuff too. Like, I got to see one of his backfield sessions and everything. Like, he, I mean, that fastball's just insane, man. Like, it's just the way he's able to make it go past guy, dominate hitters and all that stuff. Like, he is like I, it's just, you know, like a lot of my casual baseball friends obviously know about Paul Skenes. You know, I feel like a lot of people, even if you aren't a baseball fan, have heard that name. When I tell them, I think that Chase Burns has the potential to be on that same level, they all laugh at me. They're like, what the heck are you talking about? But when you see what he's done and you look at the numbers, you look at the data, and you also look at, you know, the trust in the Reds have had to call him up like that, especially as a pitcher, especially after not going last year and just pitching at instructs, you know, and really taking care of that arm care, to already be at AAA. I mean, that really speaks volumes to the, what he's been able to do, you know, on the mound.
Yeah. So here, let's play a little game that I just usually do with Dylan on the fantasy show.
Okay.
Give me a range. It could be a week or a 2 week period. When do you think Chase Burns gets called up this year? What's his ETA?
Let's go with, we're June 10th.
June 10th. He's in AAA.
I'm going to go August 20th.
Oh, I like that. I like that. I was going to go August 10th to August 20th. So we're totally linked up there.
Yeah.
I like to give a range because I haven't looked at the Reds schedule. I assume there's probably a home series at some point there.
Yeah.
That's my guess. That's just my guess, is that that's when he could potentially get called up. I guess, you know, the other part of it that you always have to consider is playoff implications. The Reds are above 500, one game above 500. They're only 6.5 back in the Central. Certainly a division where it seems like down the stretch every year, there's a lot of moves and shakes and one team that gets hot. So it wouldn't be crazy. Things start to roll. Hunter Green is back. The lineup starts to hit. Matt McClain comes back into shape and form. Yeah. He starts hitting again. You know, might make sense to call up Chase Burns, but I do think he's going to get a month or so. But not out of the realm of possibility that it's like four starts and they're just like, we've seen enough, bring them up. So whenever the Reds get hot, I think that increases the chances of Burns getting the promotion. But Burns isn't the only one that could potentially factor into a playoff race this year among these top pitching prospects. The other one would be Andrew Painter, who at one point in time was our top pitching prospect in baseball prior to being out for a couple years as he recovered from Tommy John surgery. So he's our number 10 prospect on the top 100. I think that is I think that's a pretty interesting one as well. I'm going to throw out a prediction here on when I think Andrew Painter gets called up. Did you see him when he was in AFL at all?
I did not. No, I did not.
So I was lucky enough the day before I flew out, because I was there for the first week AFL. He started my last day there in Scottsdale, his first start in AFL, and the stuff was back. The hop was back in the fastball. Secondaries were still good. Command was still coming back. He's up in AAA. He's also been pretty good so far this season. I think, you know, we all think that he could potentially factor in at some point and get some starts for the Phillies. So I'm going to say, I actually think that he's up after the All-Star break. I think they've kind of held him out a little bit to that point. Just kind of limited the innings, built him back up, had him face good competition. You know, he's got what, 32 total innings in the arm right now. Let's say he builds up, adds another 15 over the next couple of weeks, maybe 20 before then. I think they said 100 innings, 80 to 100 innings. That's about 50 innings down the stretch, and they could kind of use him as a bullpen guy, long guy, maybe even have like some openers for Painter, and he comes in and throws four innings. Mm-hmm. And then they'll still have him fresh for the playoffs. So I think, you know, that's definitely the designs of the Phillies. They're obviously four games out in the East now, but I think you'd be foolish to write them off on June 10th from a playoff run. So what say you? Do you think my Andrew Painter prediction of after the All-Star break is reasonable, or you think it's earlier or later?
No, I think it's right on par with that, because I was reading a story from MLB.com earlier in the year about Andrew Painter, and the GM, you know, said that the targeted deadline would not the targeted deadline per se, but, you know, the area that they would like him back is around the All-Star break, around July and stuff like that. So I think you're pretty spot on with that, too. I mean, prior to the surgery, which I want to ask you but something about that in a little bit. I mean, he was dominant. There hasn't been really any signs of any missteps or anything like that. He's on good pace. He's a developed arm. You look at what he did in the fall league. Encouraging signs all through it around. But I do want to ask, when we talk about pitchers and stuff like that, how much Tommy John surgery could just be, not necessarily a death sentence, but it could really decrease the stock of a player. Andrew Painter went through that, missed a lot of time. Just to kind of paint, not, no pun intended at all, but to paint the picture for our viewers and our audience and all that stuff, How does he remain so high despite going through those setbacks early in his career?
You know, I think a large part of it is Painter's been a guy who's been in the national spotlight since he was 14 years old. I mean, this was like the top pitching prospect in that class for years. And, you know, kind of maintained that, came into pro ball, took a huge step forward. Physically, he's a monster. I mean, he is a big dude, 6'7", you know, 215 pounds is what he's listed at. If you told me he was 230 just with the muscle he's added over the last couple of years and gotten a little broader and stronger, wouldn't shock me. Just the quality of the fastball. I'm sure as soon as he got into a bullpen and he was able to really throw and he was popping 96, 97 with, you know, 19, 20 inches of vert and some cut, it's probably all systems go, right? The confidence probably comes back pretty quick for a guy like that. I mean, you'd have to ask him just in terms of, you know, I've never come back from an elbow injury and I never threw probably harder than like 70 miles an hour in my entire life. So, you know, I don't fully know that. But Jesus, we talked about a couple of pitchers that were getting called up. We got really lucky again. I was
just about to bring it up. I just had to make sure on Twitter that it's all, but when Jeff Passan, it's pretty official.
Yeah, so Jacob Mizorowski has been promoted by the Brewers. So he'll be up in the big leagues this week. I don't know specific details, bullpen, starter. I'm going to assume it might be a starter role. But that said, this is an organization that has brought up guys like Burns, Peralta, Woodruff, if I'm not mistaken, kind of as like starters, and then kind of puts them in the bullpen, and they kind of build them up and get them some of that major league experience. We'll see how this all goes. But he's been really good this year. Last start wasn't great. I think the command backed up a little bit. But there was a stretch here over the early part of the season where he looked as good as he has ever looked. Efficient, you know, strike rate was up. You know, the stuff has always been insane. So the swing strike rate has never been an issue. So we do get Jacob Mizorowski. We don't have to guess an ETA on him because we know it's June 10th. So I don't know if you got to see him at all out in spring training. I know you're, you know, in the Maryville area where the Brewers are doing their complex stuff. What's the feelings on Mizorowski out there? Because I think it's a mixed bag. Some people believe he's a starter. Others just think it's huge stuff, but not enough sort of finesse in terms of being able to throw enough strikes, command the ball, etc.
Well, one thing for sure, huge. He is an insanely big human being. I mean, stands there, towers, but throws really fast. Personally, I got to see him for the first time pitch during the breakout game with the Brewers played. I think it was against the Reds. And it's crazy to see the amount of strikes that he was hitting that game, how fast, how high octane. And we've seen it throughout the year where he hit 103 miles per hour at one point this year. It's just going to come down to the strike rate at the end of the day. You know, I think you mentioned it too, like the Brewers have done stuff where they like to stretch out guys before they put into that starter role. I mean, whether he starts out of the bullpen or in the rotation, I think specifically if he's coming out of the bullpen, you know, maybe not in a high leverage situation to begin his career or anything like that, but he has to immediately prove that he can throw the strike. Right. I mean, that's what your job is as a pitcher. And I think that's something that's kind of held them back to really maximize the potentials. We know the stuff there. We know the fastball's there. It's all about locating. It's all about finding it. And I think the other thing, too, that we talked about, you know, with the Brewers being, I think, one of the better systems to develop arms or just overall talent in general from the international side or whatever. But I think they'll find a way to figure out for him to succeed at that next level. But it's just also crazy that we're 2-for-2 in recording and stuff like that, and then Mizorowski gets called up. Who knows, maybe next week JJ decides to extend his vacation and Andrew Painter and Bubba Chandler get called up, right? But I mean, it's an exciting time right now with all these young pitchers coming up and all these younger prospects that have been around not too long in the minors and already see them back home. But I think it really makes the game exciting too.
That's right. Jesus and I are on a prospect podcast strike. We're going to podcast until all the good prospects have been promoted by their respective organizations. So, yeah, a little 2-for-2 isn't too bad. 1,000% batting average. We'll take that to the bank and retire after this.
When you make a hire, it doesn't take long before you know. You know what I mean. You know. You know if you nailed the hire. Is your new addition going to be a star? Or did you make a mistake? Find your company's next star with Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed, sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Indeed has helped us hire stars at Baseball America time and time again. Some of the people you hear on our podcast came to us through hires we made through Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Hire rock stars right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Good stuff. As we talked about, though, we're going to move on from some of those call-ups. I want to talk to Jesus because he's out there in Arizona. He's got his feet on the ground. He's feeling the sand out there, the desert sand out there. He's touching the cacti. He's seeing the prospects. So, dude, let's talk a little bit about these three prospects that you wanted to discuss out there in the Arizona Complex League. I'm sure we'll get some more detail on some ACL guys next week as Josh Norris returns from his Barizona, as he likes to call it, adventure. But first guy I want to bring up here is a right-hander, 18-year-old right-hander from the Giants, Argenis Cayama. That's A-R-G-E-N-I-S, Cayama, C-A-Y-A-M-A, for those of you out there with your fantasy leagues. Jotting this down, looking for names to pick up. Always want to spell it for you when it's a little difficult. So, Jesus, talk to me a little bit about this guy, man, because you've seen him. And I know I've heard some good things. I've actually dug into some of the data as well.
I mean, dude, I mean, best pitcher in the complex league, you know, by far through the first month. He's a straight up dog, man, at 18 years old and kind of the journey that he's been on, you know, signed out of the Venezuela in 2024, was issued $147,000. And actually his first month before he made his DSL debut, he had to battle pneumonia, man. It went through a tough time. I wrote about it at baseballamerica.com, so check out that story if you can. But the gist of it is, you know, he lost close to 20 pounds. You know, the velocity was down, and he was able to build that back up and had a good year, a solid year in the Dominican Summer League. And then comes over stateside debut, and it's just been absolutely dominant. I mean, doesn't have a flashy delivery, but it's repeatable and effective. Fastball sits between 92 to 98. It's touched that high. And he has a good way of manipulating his shape. But when you talk to him, too, it's like when I interviewed him for that story, he's very mature for his age. You know, it didn't feel like I was talking to like an 18-year-old guy in the United States for the first time. It felt like I was talking to somebody who had been around the game for a while. And I think the way a player carries himself kind of also translates onto the way that they're able to dominate, as I've learned through the past couple years helping out with the prospect coverage. But his changeup and his slider also have really good depth, man. I mean, this is I think with how young he is, I think it's going to be important to keep him throughout maybe all of the ACL, especially since it doesn't run as long or as deep into the season as we've seen in the past, just because he's, like I get, young, maturity comes into play too. One thing that when I talk to him too is he's trying to learn how to control his emotions a little bit, and I definitely have seen that when I watch him pitch. You know, he definitely gets a little bit animated when he gets out of situations, but he doesn't get as animated whenever he makes a mistake or anything like that. And I think that says a lot to the way he's able, the attitude that he's had that's kind of driven him to this point, man. So I mean, him and Luis De La Torre too, it's another pitcher in the Giants system that's really good, that has hammered a lot of strikes. But Cayama is the guy down there too. You know, I mean, it's just every scout that I've talked to has told me that he's the best pitcher. The numbers back it up, you know, and it's exciting to see what he has. I think in Josh Norris's Giants rankings, he went from number 26 to number 15 or 16, middle of the pack at just 18. You know, he's looking like that. There's a lot more room to develop, of course, but it's going to be really exciting to see how much he grows as the years go by, man. He's really freaking good.
Yeah, and kind of digging into the data a little bit, I'll have more on this today on the site, as I wrote about some complex pitchers just from a data perspective. It's like it's a legit like low release height sinker, but he creates like kind of a steep plane. So it's kind of deceptive to kind of be like a 5'8 release height, but still be able to sort of create like this steeper VAA plane than what like guys are typically used to seeing. That's really interesting. It's an interesting pitch. As you said, like get 93.7 on the average velocity. I think I have it up to like 97.5. So round up to 98 on a typical stalker gun. The slider's like almost like a slurvy, because it's got depth, as you said. Like it's a it's a negative vert with a little bit of sweep. It's almost like a slurve, or like, you know, what guys are kind of calling the death ball right now, curveball. But it's a good pitch, really interesting. And the changeup doesn't have like a ton of separation off of the sinker, but it kind of shouldn't because of how steep that sinker is. But it is kind of splittery almost. It's an interesting mix. And I think with these guys too, as you mentioned, keep in mind that what you see on the complex often isn't even the version of a pitcher that you see once they get to full season ball, like next spring. Not this year. If these guys get a couple of starts, it is what it is. But like Juan Valera's stuff for the Red Sox ticked up a little bit this offseason. The shapes got a little bit more defined as they get older, figure things out, certain different types of, you know, pitch development, et cetera, that they're exposed to. Like those shapes become a little bit more defined. So if you are looking at complex data, because I know some of those games have been played in Florida as well as in Arizona in the big stadium, so it's in front of Hawkeye. And I think people are sometimes, this looks weird. It's like, well, because it's not fully formed yet. You know, these guys, especially pitchers at 18, they're still babies. Even if they get to the big leagues early, they'll be 22, 23. Yeah. There's very few 21-year-olds that pitch and get into the major leagues. There's even, I mean, there's a few more hitters. There's very few hitters that get to the major leagues at 21. So I think it's always important to keep in mind. Let's move on to some hitters here, actually. Got a couple of names. I think one to anybody who follows the draft, probably pretty familiar. Tyson Lewis. He's made some waves out there in Arizona, as much as you possibly can make waves in a place that doesn't have the ocean. But big EVs, dude. And he's a huge, I mean, a legitimately impressive athlete, one of the better athletes in the class. Really interesting player, somebody that, you know, I was excited to just kind of see for the first time this year. So what have you seen from Tyson Lewis? And I could certainly jump in with some numbers and stuff that I've been able to pull.
I mean, you talk about the EVs, man. I mean, he hits the ball like it owes him money, man. Like, that's how hard he absolutely hits it. So, if you owe Tyson Lewis, be sure to pay him back. But in all seriousness, man, like, I remember the first time I got to see him was when I actually came back from the Cal League, my Cal League stop. And I went over to the Goodyear Stadium to go check out the Reds versus the Rangers. And literally in the first at-bat, man, I'm recording, and he absolutely demolishes this ball. 114.8 mile per hour exit velocity, 434 feet into center field at Goodyear Ballpark. It's only been its only home run of the season, but that ball was just loud. And even in his first couple of hits before that, he registered at 109.9 and 119.4 miles per hour. All this is recorded because it was happening at Goodyear Ballpark, where they have Satcast and all that stuff too. But like, his swing is really pretty, man. It's a really nice swing. The only thing that comes with that too is that he's a little bit aggressive in the count. I mean, 17 strikeouts to 4 walks. I think that's the biggest thing hindering right now, is he's going to really need to clean up that plate discipline, which is funny, because when I look at him, there's a couple of pitches that I'll see him take that I'm like, wow, that's a really good pitch to take. And then he'll go right away and swing and whiff at the next 3 pitches right away. And it's like, oh, well, all of that for nothing. But I think the important thing to remember too, he's a really young player, high school draft pick last year by the Reds. You know, really good player, man. Like, and the other thing too is like, he's physically developed too. Like, that's one thing that I've learned as I've started to evaluate and watch players. It's how much they can grow into their body. But I look at a guy like Tyson Lewis, where he is well developed in all areas, man. He has a good lower half, good upper half. Height is up there. You know, I think given his size, he might outgrow shortstop. I think he has a really strong arm. I'm not exactly sure where his future could rely right now, because he's so young. But at the plate, man, like, it's exciting to see every single time that he's up there. You know, he was the highest ever drafted player from the state of Nebraska. So, I mean, he's kind of been an outlier in terms of that state there too. But there's just so much more room for him to grow, man. And it's really exciting to see. I think he's definitely one of the more exciting players. I know he was on the IL to start the year. Not sure exactly what the injury was. And I thought he was just going to be here for a rehab start. Turns out he's been here a little bit longer and should be here for a little bit more. So, yeah, man, I mean, to have a talent like him, especially in these day of age where the complex league has changed a lot since they moved it up a little bit more to instead of having it after the draft happens, like he's one of those rare talents to see out here where you see a fully developed athlete ready to go at such a young age. And, I mean, we talk about – I mean, it's kind of crazy to say, but we talk about, you know, talking about pitchers who are 22, 23 making it up there. I think the way Tyson Lewis looks right now, if he can really fix that plate discipline, and obviously it's such a small sample size, but with just with the way he's developed, the way he hits the ball, I wouldn't be surprised if he is kind of on a fast track to get up there, regardless if he's a high school, you know, high school draft pick or not. Like, he is really, really good.
Yeah, and I think all that stuff is important to keep in mind. It is, you know, a Nebraska prep talent, so even being on the showcase circuit, the sample isn't that big. Like, it's just a matter of getting him up to speed with facing better arms. And I think a lot of stuff that you said is kind of shows up in the data. Like, it's a 61% in zone swing rate. So, like, you want to see like above 70%. Mm-hmm. You know, 80% is like outrageously good, but that 70 to like 80% range, because you want guys swinging at strikes, right? That's true plate discipline. That's identifying pitches not to swing at and those that you should attack. But, you know, does have a higher chase rate with a lower swing rate. It's like a 41% swing rate with a 27% chase. Mm-hmm. Usually I want to see a 20% delta between the swing rate and the chase rate. That's a 13% delta. And it's like a 26% whiff rate. So he's definitely swinging himself into a few more outs. The batted ball angles are kind of more linear, a little bit more flat. That's something that, you know, with that power, he'll have to kind of figure out, you know, so it's not an underlying like Roman Anthony kind of profile where he had really good bat to ball skills and approach and all that sort of stuff right off the jump. But a huge athlete and, you know, a guy who could grow into something that in 2 years, you know, we're ranking this guy in the top 50 prospects or something like that. I think Tyson Lewis is really exciting. So that's a great name. Last name we're gonna do here, and then we'll wrap the show up with a couple of our usual prospect soapboxes. One of my favorite names, hopefully I say it correctly, and Yervert Perez, I guess listed as a shortstop, but really a third baseman for the D-backs ACL affiliate. So talk to me a little bit about our buddy and Yervert.
I mean, there's a lot of internal buzz within the D-backs organization about this guy. That's how I was able to get tipped off by him. And, I mean, the first time I saw him play was against – it was on the backfield recently, I think about a week or two ago. And first two at-bats, hit the crap out that ball. Exit velocity is over – let me get the exact numbers because I want to be as accurate as possible. But, yeah, exit velocity is at 105 and 103. And his swing just looks really, really developed. Like, it looks – I mean, it looks like a swing from somebody that's in the upper levels rather than the ACL, you know, like the way he was able to extend his arms for one of them. It's really he's another player that's also like really, really aggressive at the beginning, too. But like just to see him go through that motion and also like the other thing, too, that I really stood out about him was his plate discipline at some points, too. I think similar, I wouldn't say a similar profile to Lewis at all because they're two different players, two different sides. But I think in the way that they approach the plate and stuff like that, I think Perez has really emerged himself as one of the better players in the complex league. Defensively, like you mentioned, third baseman right now. But from what I heard, you know, there's work to be done at third base, but he could also have a potential future at first base too. Those are the two positions. He's outgrown shortstop, he's outgrown second base. It's a little bit bigger, 19 years old, spent 2 years in the Dominican Summer League, so he comes with a little bit more experience compared to most players here. But yeah, he's a guy that's kind of strung on to me. He made the D-backs top 30 right at 30. That's how much buzz there was about this guy from scouts that I've talked to and all the other people going on right now. Like, he is in a really good position right now. It's going to be interesting to see what they do later on with him now, just because he is a little bit on the older side at 19, which isn't too fun to say considering I'm 25 and that's pretty old for a prospect. But either way, like, he is a guy that's definitely drawn a lot of heads down in the complex league.
I'm 43, homie, with three kids, and they remind me how gray my beard is getting. So
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, you're not old yet. You're not old yet. It's not bad. I don't even feel like I'm old, you know? Still moving. All right. You're good. All right. That's great stuff. Little Arizona Complex League update from Mr. Cano. All right, we're going to roll into our prospect stope boxes here. I'm going to give you a break because you just talked a lot. So I'm going to jump into mine right now. It's something that was mentioned to me by a bunch of scouts that I've spoken with that have covered the Red Sox organization. Obviously, going back to the top of the show, going back to the jump, I talk to a lot of people to do this. That's a lot of part of my, you know, a big part of my reporting is asking about players. They're at games. They're talking to me about stuff. And people were noticing how few times some of these starters they were going to see, it was one guy in particular going to see David Sandlin, were throwing their fastballs. And it seemed to be a common trend through all the different affiliates with the Red Sox. So, you know, I reached out to some of my contacts and asked somebody if they would be able to pull all of the breaking ball usage from AAA all the way down to the domestic complex leagues and tell me what the usage rate was on breaking balls. And surprise, surprise, Jesus, the Boston Red Sox were number one with a staggering 46.7% usage rate entering Friday of last week. That is pretty substantial. There are 10 teams in baseball or organizations throughout baseball who have 40% plus breaking ball usage rate. This includes cutters, sliders, sweepers, and curveballs. So all sort of variations of spin. Miami, a fellow model team to the Red Sox, is second with 44%. Then it's followed by the Cubs, the Mets, the Astros, Baltimore, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Texas, and St. Louis are the 40% plus teams. Not a surprise. The delta between the Red Sox and the Marlins is about 2% overall, which is a pretty decent delta when you think about it. And the difference between the Red Sox and number three, the Cubs, is about a 4% delta. So there's a pretty big jump here. I'm going to be doing more reporting on this. I'm going to be writing an article probably for later this week, early next week, talking to some folks of the Red Sox organization. You know, I think it falls in line with maybe a few different things. One in particular is, you know, they draft guys that have quality breaking balls and they think that you should throw your best pitch more often. I think that is a mentality and a philosophy that we've seen a lot over the last couple of years, just in sort of the greater baseball brain trust kind of space. And I think it's also why a lot of model teams are doing this, because a lot of model teams also value what the stuff and et cetera, all those sort of per pitch sort of metrics that they have internally. It's not always stuff plus or that. There's some variations, I'm sure, some stuff that's more advanced. It's going to like breaking balls and sliders more than anything else, right? Like having done some stuff plus work myself, obviously internally with our model and looking at data, it's going to like sliders. So I think that's probably part of it too, but I want to talk to player development. I want to talk to some coaches, some pitching coordinators, et cetera, and hear it from the horse's mouth and learn a little bit more. So I guess this isn't as much a soapbox as it is a preview, but it's something to watch if you're going to watch any of those 10 teams I sort of mentioned, particularly the Red Sox, the Marlins, and the Cubs affiliates. Notice how many breaking balls they're throwing when you're watching these games, because it might be close to 50% sort of secondary stuff versus the fastball. We're seeing less and less fastballs, Jesus.
Oh, for sure, man. That's a really interesting thing that I really, you know, as somebody who isn't as deep connected into the metrics and the numbers and all that stuff. So, I mean, that's going to be a really good piece that we're going to have on baseballamerica.com that the viewers should go out and check it out in the future. Of course, that plug, top end, bottom end plug, man. You know the vibes, man. But in terms of, like, you know, my soapbox, obviously this is my first time and stuff like that. I mean, for people who maybe are tuning in for the podcast for the first time, what is it exactly that you and JJ do at the end, you know, when you come talk about your soapbox?
So we typically come in and just kind of have something interesting, maybe a player that we want to stump for that we like more than maybe the rest of the staff, or just generally, or someone who's just impressed us. So really, the only rule is that it can't be about a top 100 prospect, mm-hmm. but it can be about something more general, or about a non top 100 prospect. So that's typically where we go with the soapboxes.
So he's not a top 100 guy because I've advocated for this guy to get on the top 100. And it seems like some people are with me, some people are not. But I'm talking about Sal Stewart from the Reds, man. I mean, he is a guy that, you know, during the backfields generated a lot of buzz for me. And, you know, a lot of different people that I talk to, and you look at what he's doing, you know, he's not exactly the guy that's going to smash everything with power, but he, you know, he shows those extra base hits. He shows ways to get on base. He shows ways to contribute. I think he's a player that's really starting to develop a little bit for the Reds. I know we talked about Tyson Lewis, and they have a really, really good group of minor league infielders down there too, because you also have Cam Collier, who is rehabbing, or was rehabbing last week with the complex. Not sure if that rehab assignment is over or stuff like that. But I mean, Sal Stewart was described to me by a scout as an OPS machine, and I think we kind of seen that into this year. I know he's landed on our hot sheet a couple of times. He's a guy that, you know, is also improving on defense. I think that was the biggest thing that maybe held him back a little bit from rising up his stock a bit, but through a lot of people that I've talked to that have, you know, watched him from the backfields up to now to what he's doing. He's a guy that's kind of developing over right there. So I think that's a guy to definitely keep an eye out, you know, about too, because not a top 100 guy. Hopefully he'll be in there soon. But he's not necessarily a guy that's getting as much attention within that system itself that I think can be really, really good.
I agree. It's a tough profile. But he certainly has outlier plate skills, the bat to ball abilities there. The approach has always been really good. And I think there's underlying power he just hasn't fully gotten into yet. So I don't know. I mean, it kind of could be like a Kyle Manzardo sort of like profile, like when everything kind of comes to fruition that he checks all those different boxes. If he really goes like bananas with the power and finds a little bit more, I don't think a Vinny Pasquantino comp is all that bad either. So kind of somewhere in there to, like, I guess the floor, if, you know, it doesn't go crazy, is like maybe like a Ty France or like a Ryan Healy sort of profile, something along those lines. But can play a little second base, so it is kind of interesting. But Jesus, I appreciate it for joining me, especially all you listeners out there for tuning in, those watching on YouTube. We appreciate your support. You can check out more of our work, of course, at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, for Jesus, for the whole BA team, thanks for tuning in. This has been the Prospect Podcast.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night: cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.